I'm John Reardon. I'm the Director of Community Relations and Partnerships for Boston Children's Hospital. And after listening to the challenges of trying to undertake this work at a statewide level with a state as big as California, Boston's looking a lot more manageable.
Good. Can I come work with you?
As far as disclosures, I got nothing. What I'm here to talk about today sort of follows nicely on what Mary was talking about. It is how, at least how we were able to get from a situation where we were doing a programmatic intervention to transforming that into policy and then subsequently transforming that into practice. So if all goes according to script, we will fill in the blanks here. The two program partners here are Boston Children's Hospital and the Boston Public Schools. And to give you a flavor for the Boston Public Schools, it's not atypical of a relatively large urban school system, 128 schools, 86% students of color, 78% low income. Staffing, there's 8,500 professional staff, but only 57 school psychologists, so that's one for every 1,000 kids, which is a little thin. A lot of the kids come from areas of high poverty with deteriorating social structures and families that experience systematic discrimination or systemic discrimination. Recent study showed that over half had experienced behavioral adverse experience, ACEs, had experienced at least one or more adverse experience. And all of this puts these students at greater risk for behavioral health problems. And yet, most of the families that are impacted by this don't have access to resources that could address the problems. And while in 2014 and 2015, 90 of the 128 schools have a behavioral health partner, when we started this work in 2002, there were no standards of care. There were no service agreements, and there was a lack of information about how to access the services that were available at individual schools. And then again, excuse me, the shortage of professionals, mental health professionals, was unlikely to be remedied in the near future because of the ongoing challenges of schools' budgets. So the other program partner was Children's Hospital, which in 2002 was approached by a number of schools asking for assistance in addressing behavioral health problems. These schools were had a range of different issues, and the Department of Psychiatry established what it called Children's Hospital Neighborhood Partners. The way it was structured turns out to have been very advantageous. We decided not to do it as a fee-for-service model, which limits what you can do, but decided to go into the schools and with sort of a blank slate and ask them what they needed and how we can support what they needed. So it is more philanthropically and hospital-funded. And the range of requests were pretty diverse in lots of ways. In one instance, I'm told that the first year was spent in getting the adults in the building to play nicely together, and then they moved on to the students. the model is a social worker or a psychologist in the school 5 days a week, so somebody who really kind of got integrated into the school day and the school culture. The goals were to increase access to services, promote healthy social-emotional development, build sustainable capacity, achieve satisfaction with the services, and then I think the thing that I'd emphasize is that it started with an eye towards how do you promote systemic change through this kind of programmatic initiative. So while the program started in individual schools responding to individual school needs. Over the course of time, what the frontline practitioners found was that there were themes that they developed into sort of an operating model or a service delivery model that they felt would apply to all schools. And a lot of this won't surprise you, but you know, it starts on a basis of capacity building within the schools, which is training and consult with teachers, some prevention and promotion, intervening in classroom situations where it was needed, early intervention, coordinating services, and clinical intervention, which is where a lot of the other partners had been spending a majority of their time. So again, one of the advantages of the approach that we took was that we could look at other levels of support for school, the individual schools. While the practitioners came found that there were themes that were applicable to all schools, they also found that the system that they were working within was largely dysfunctional, and that was the state system. It wasn't actually a system. It was a series of sort of stovepipe interventions department by department with little connection to community-based services. So while they were doing the work at the school level, the word got back to the hospital that this is something that it needs a broader approach. And the first thing that was done was we commissioned a study by the Mass Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children to determine, to sort of give an idea of what condition the state mental health system was in, and they confirmed a lot of the findings that the folks were observing at the ground level. That was used to put together a coalition of folks to propose legislative changes to address some of the problems that would help to support schools. So by 2008, over 135 organizations had joined into an effort that proposed and actually succeeded in passing legislation that was geared towards enhancing early identification, treating children in the most appropriate setting, enhancing state health agency coordination, and establishing oversight mechanism for the state system. So the Children's Hospital Neighborhood Partnership ensured that that language, the legislative language, specified that children be treated in the most appropriate settings. And for this population, schools were the most appropriate settings. So the 2008 legislation created a behavioral health and public schools task force charged with developing a safe and supportive schools framework that could be applied statewide. And in 2012, the campaign that was developed around the original broader legislation proposed a second round of legislation to support to promote a safe and supportive schools bill. To their credit, Boston Public Schools didn't wait for the legislation to pass. So we've been working on it for several years prior to that in individual schools, but we decided that we would try and implement the framework in advance of the legislation, which I think had a positive impact on sort of the legislature's willingness to consider passing the legislation. Being the biggest school district in the state, I think it carried a lot of weight that we were going to move ahead with or without the legislation. One of the things we did do, though, is excuse me, over the next couple of years, hold a series of showcases. And the intention of that was to show some of the progress that was being made in the schools that were participating in this. The folks who were invited were state legislators, opinion leaders, folks in the field, and it was a way of sort of highlighting the value of this work as it was being debated in the legislature. Again, to Boston Public Schools' credit, they adopted it as district-wide policy in 2013 before the legislation was passed. but in 2014, the state passed the Safe and Supportive Schools legislation. What that includes is a universal screening tool that was adapted, that actually is for use by teachers, not by clinicians. And it gives teachers a way to identify kids who, both the kids who are acting out are easy to identify, the ones who are internalizing aren't as easy. It gives teachers a way of identifying kids that might need a little bit more assistance. And then it's got a progress monitoring tool that allows them to keep track of the kids' progress over the next year or so. Not surprising for folks that are in this business, the intervention was a multi-tiered system of support that included prevention at the social-emotional curriculum for all classrooms. It also called for professional development for educators and administrators, a realignment of resources, and an enhancement of community partnerships. So once you get the legislation passed, it's tempting to think that your job is done, but hearing from someone who I think is a teacher, what we realized is that in addition to teaching, schools are asked to address a whole spectrum of social ills. And teachers, I think, justifiably feel burdened by a lot of what they're asked to do. So we wanted to make sure that this was adopted both at the district, school, and student level. So at the district level, the first thing we did was ensure that it aligned with the academic achievement framework. So the business of schooling is academics. This is in service of academic achievement. So they had a three-tiered system of academic achievement framework, and we just applied this as a supplement to that. We created an executive work group that was made up of administrators in the schools, but also partners, Boston Children's and UMass. UMass Boston, because we wanted to make sure that we had some ability to do some measurement of the impact. We created a website so that both other schools could keep track of what was going on, and other opinion leaders would have a way of keeping track of what's going on. We created a research team that developed a database to make sure that it was having the desired impact. And we hosted training sessions for BVS teachers and administrators. And the districts tend to appreciate when you leverage additional funding, and we were able to leverage additional funding as well. So, because our concern was that we wanted to make sure that this was adopted by the schools, we started off with piloting. Excuse me, I'm going to get some water. I've often been asked how long I've had laryngitis, and to the best I can tell, I've never had laryngitis, or I've always had laryngitis. So, what we did initially was pilot in 10 schools, but we asked that the schools volunteer. So we wanted to make sure that it was the schools that believed it was in their self-interest to participate in this program and saw it as something that would support their efforts to improve academic achievement. Everything from the initial screening tool to the implementation of the framework was done in a way that asked for feedback. So the teachers actually selected the screening tool from among several tools that were offered. And as we went through the process, each of the cohorts that went through the pilot put their own stamp on it, to the point where while it's still this Safe and Supportive Schools framework, within Boston Public Schools, it's known as the Comprehensive Behavioral Health Model. So it's, people were able to put their own stamp on it. The other thing we did is we did it, have been doing it in cohorts of 10 schools a year. And what we've asked for the folks who've gone through the training is that they participate in the training of subsequent cohorts of schools, which is much more effective if it's a peer-to-peer training than somebody coming in from the outside. So this has had the effect of having it be teacher-initiated and teacher-promoted throughout the schools. So at this point, we have adopted it in 40 of the 128 schools. The screenings have been done for 15,000 students. There's a new problem-solving structure. Positive behavioral intervention and supports in 40 schools. I should mention that some schools had interventions in place already, so this wasn't prescriptive, except that any intervention had to be evidence-based. So if a school was already using an intervention model, they were encouraged to continue to use it. And many of the schools that were using an intervention model, when they saw the framework, said, oh, now I know why I'm doing it. So they saw where it fit into the overall structure. 400 professional development hours across 200 sessions. There's a lot of professional development involved in this work. 1,000 teachers have participated. And there's a new research-based curriculum in the 40 schools. So there's some very preliminary data at the student level, but it is showing that there's a decrease in problem behaviors, conduct, and negative affect among the students who've been participating. Somewhat of an increase in positive behaviors, social and academic functioning. And this is a little more tenuous, but there's beginning to show that there's some connection to academic achievement. So the findings, we did find statistically significant increase in average social scale scores and a nearly significant decrease in negative conduct scores. So what have we learned? If you're involved in a programmatic initiative, it helps to start with an eye towards systemic change. It also helps to demonstrate some expertise so you have a platform from which to make your case. And in this case, the community, the Children's Hospital Neighborhood Partnership was awarded a Heroes in the Fight Award. It gave them some standing to stand up. On the policy level in politics or in trying to change legislation, it's often beneficial to have a study that identifies the problem, elevates the problem into a sort of public debate, and lays out some possible solutions, which is what was done with the Mass Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, which did the initial study. The other thing that was essential is it's getting legislation passed is a roller coaster. And it helps to have a core group of folks who are working closely together, speaking the same language, and are moving the process in a positive direction. In this case, and it helps to have folks that have both expertise in the area and extensive reach. So we started with the Mass Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children doing the study, but they also have enormous credibility and a network of other organizations they work for. We reached out to a statewide parent professional advocacy league, which is a very effective group of invested parents and health law advocates to help with the legal and legislative issues. And then Healthcare for All, which in Massachusetts is a statewide advocacy group that, again, has lots of credibility and broad reach. So they served as sort of a core group that then pulled the other 135 or so organizations together to sign on to the legislation. And then in practice, what we found is in order to be effective, once you've got the policies, they're great if they're only useful if they're implemented. So at the district level, we found that it was very important and key to align the behavioral health model with the academic achievement model so that there was buy-in at the top of the chain. And then in implementing it, making sure that the folks at the school level and at the classroom level were bought in by initially identifying folks who see it as in their own self-interest to get this done and have them be part of the sales force in getting other folks to sign on. And with that, I'm done.